me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Well, here to take us back to 1967 are the Box Tops. And that's their hit, The Letter. Larry Mueller here today. We're taking a look back at the hits from the Summer of Love, as they called 1967. Tom Wilmoth back with us. He's been a passionate collector of popular and unpopular music since he was a kid, and is the author of the book Soundbites, A Lifetime of Listening. And you can hear him on his podcast. It's called The Vinyl Approach. And as we go through these songs, we get a lot of them. I want to hear from you. What's your favorite song from or artist from 1967? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Tom Wilmoth, welcome back. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me on, Larry. This is great.
Well, you put a lot of work into this. You've got a list of songs, and I had forgotten how many. There are a lot of songs that were, you can still hear.
Yes. These have legs. These have lasting power, no doubt about it. A lot of them were, and there are a lot of songs from 1967 because the charts were turning over quickly and songs would come and go fast and very different from today. But, yeah, there are a lot of them.
How did you, and you've got it organized, and we're going to go, I'm using your list here, by golly. How did you decide to organize your list of songs?
I kind of started with a strong one there, The Letter by the Box Tops, and such a great song, Alex Chilton's voice. But I kind of went with some big ones and melodic ones, and then I slowed it down and just kind of like I was putting together a music show, I guess. Tried to hit a lot of bases.
Well, maybe you can set the scene for what was happening in 67. I mean, both in the music industry and certainly the cultural, political sphere. Was something to behold.
It absolutely was, and some of the big things in music, of course, later in the... It was the Summer of Love, like you said. Later in the summer, the Monterey Pop Festival would be held, and that opened the door for the introduction. Really, The Who really made it big there. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin performed it. The Monterey Pop was... I used to talk to people who they said, you know, forget about Woodstock. It's all Monterey Pop. And I thought, I'm not sure I agree with that. But Monterey Pop is tremendously important. Also, some huge releases. I don't think anything bigger than the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper came out that year. And, of course, like you said, I think things in turmoil, the Vietnam War raging and increasing. And there was just a lot happening socially and musically.
Well, we have, let's start on the playlist here because, well, number two at least, Windy, The Association, by The Association. Let's hear a little bit and then I'll have you comment. Windy. Man, that's a toe-tapper.
Yeah, strong, great vocal band, seven-piece band, instrumentalists. They could do their own stuff. They only had a handful of hits, but they were really big hits. Windy, Cherish, Never My Love, Along Comes Mary. And again, Windy, you could call it an earworm today, but, I mean, that Windy's a real, as you say, a real toe-tapper. That's a strong tune.
And we've got a song by the Young Rascals, Groovin', and here's another one, if I'm not mistaken. We got that one, Jeff?
I can't imagine anything that's better. The world is ours whenever we're together. There ain't a place I like to be instead of groovin'.
Grooving on a crowded avenue.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that because I always had beautiful voice, but I always had trouble hearing some of the lyrics, too. I thought they were singing, you know, you and me and Leslie. And I thought, well, who is Leslie? And it's you and me endlessly. But then I thought, well, maybe he's talking about the Leslie on his Hammond organ. But I put that on early because I wanted to make sure to get to that, because I believe that was the number one song in the country the week you started your show back in 67. Like in mid-May of 67, that was number one. And so I wanted to make sure we got to that. But that was Blue-Eyed Soul coming out of New Jersey. And again, another very much of an organ-dominant band, which would start to kind of creep in a way there. You'd have the Doors had a guitarist, but organ was so important to that band, and certainly for the Young Rascals, organ was tremendously important there. But yeah, that's for your beginning of the show.
That's exactly when I started, too. Middle of May, 1967. So thanks for looking that one up for me, Tom.
You bet.
Sherry in Verona has a comment. Let's go there. Sherry, hi.
Oh, hello, am I on?
You are.
Oh, all righty. Oh, well, I thought, of course, we have to listen to, if you're going to San Francisco, Wear Some Flowers in Your Hair. That is the iconic song for the Summer of Love.
have we got that one?
If you're going to San Francisco,
man, Scott McKenzie.
Absolutely, and very close associations with the Mamas and the Papas, and that made everybody want to go to San Francisco, and it as you know, it kind of turned unfortunate there. The San Francisco government, local fathers, had to finally put out an ordinance discouraging youth from coming to San Francisco because it was not going well for as far as homeless kids showing up looking for Nirvana.
Oh, man. Cheryl, thanks. You hit the nail on the head with that one. How about the Doors and Light My Fire?
The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre.
Oh, man. That group, no bass player?
Right. Yeah, and again, that was really unusual at the time. The bass was handled by the organist Ray's left hand and the pedals, but there was no true bass player and not a flashy guitar player with Robbie Krieger. It was a lot of organ, a lot of vocal, and a very distinctive frontman.
Very unusual, huh?
Yeah. No band quite like the Doors. They were kind of considered a dangerous band in some ways, kind of like the Stones would be in the later 60s, just kind of almost a menacing group. But they had several big hits, and again, no other band quite like the Doors.
How about the Turtles? They had a number one, Happy Together. I think we have that up.
You and you and me. No matter how they toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together.
That was a big hit, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that was huge. Almost the opposite of the Doors. It was just a sing-along, fun song, and yeah, huge hit, number one for several weeks, and yeah, the Turtles had a lot of hits, but none bigger than that one.
Yeah, and that's one of those sticks in your head forever.
Absolutely.
Well, this is really fun. I can't believe how I could sing all of these songs, I think. Sam and Dave had Soul Man, which was that did pretty well, too.
Right. Sam and Dave almost got thrown together by accident on Stax Records, and then the record they put out became huge, and, you know, once that happens, then you are solidified as a band and expected to keep on putting out more hits. But they were not the biggest friend off stage. But on stage, it was supposedly a show like none other, and they just did had a string of hits. And again, Soul Man would come back in later with the Blues Brothers and even use part of that backing band, Steve Cropper on guitar. So that Soul Man kind of took on a life of its own. But Sam and Dave and the original Soul Man back from 67, that was huge for that group and also helped Stack Records out of Memphis in a huge way. Stax is... It's overlooked some ways. It's in the shadow of Motown sometimes, but Stax Records out of Memphis is tremendously important.
Let's listen. Well, it's another one that I, well, the words to that are pretty easy to remember. Oh, well, the Stones, Rolling Stones had a number one hit in 67. And let's play a little bit of that, Ruby Tuesday. You had something to say about Brian Jones in this.
Yeah, Brian Jones is, it's amazing to say, but he's kind of a forgotten Rolling Stone. He organized the band. That was his band, and then they kind of outgrew him. And he died in 1969, and now I know people who are really into the Rolling Stones who kind of draw a blank when you say Brian Jones. But Brian Jones, again, a member of the 27 Club as far as dying at that young age, he put the band together, and they started to go in different directions. Although he's very important to that single, and that's kind of, for me, that's kind of his last great hurrah as far as his influence on the band. And yeah, Brian Jones does not get enough credit, but he's certainly involved there.
Tom Wilmoth, our guest today. We are playing songs from 1967, which was the year that I started broadcasting. Question, comment, maybe you've got a song from that year, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop.
Oh man, Buffalo Springfield. That's a political song, for what it's worth.
It really is. That's it's talking about the riots on the Sunset Strip and how Stephen Stills wrote that tune and is pointing to some of the action of the police that he wasn't very happy with. And, you know, you could call the Buffalo Springfield a one-hit band, and they really were, and yet they were so much more than that. That was, as you say, a political song, and then out of that band would come Stills and Neil Young and Richie Furey and but Stills and Young would later get together not long after they broke up with Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. So Buffalo Springfield, that first album was just absolutely tanking. Nobody was buying it. And then they had that hit, and they put that hit on the first album, and that's what a hit single will do. It changed things for them, and they had a career.
Yeah. The Hollies. We haven't heard from the Hollies yet, and there's another song, Carrie Ann. Let's listen to that one, and you can comment after.
You were always something special to me, quite independent, never caring. You lost your charm as you were aging. Where is your magic disappearing?
Hey, Carrie Ann, what's your game now?
Oh man, there's some harmony there.
That's exactly right. That's not my favorite hit by the Hollies, but it does have Graham Nash on that high high harmony, and it fits the year as far as 1967. But the Hollies get overlooked pretty much, I think, as a British invasion band. But they were there, and they were there early, and they had a lot of hits. And like I say, Graham Nash came out of that band. And I'm not sure the Hollies always get their due, but they were important at the time.
Yeah. And, of course, another important group was the Beatles. Let's listen to a little bit of Penny Lane.
Penny Lane is in my ear and in my eye. Four of fish and finger pies in summer. Meanwhile, back behind the shelter.
Oh, man. That was... I believe you mentioned that was a song meant to be on the Sgt. Pepper.
Right. Producer George Martin talks about how both Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever were both finished and ready to go, and that was going to be the first two tunes recorded for Sgt. Pepper, but the record company demanded a single for the Christmas market, I believe, and so George Martin reluctantly gave those two tunes up for a single, and he said it was the worst mistake he ever made in his life. And the Beatles were... They didn't like to repeat, so if there was a single out, they didn't want to put it on the next regular album. They wanted people to get their money's worth, and so once that was out as a single, they think those would have fit very, very well on Sgt. Pepper. And it's interesting, too, as far as those are both songs of nostalgia from young men who are certainly only in their mid-20s, and Paul McCartney's most recent release has gone back to nostalgia, but... Sorry, Paul, but I doubt if there's anything on the new album that can touch Penny Lane.
I think you're right about that. Well, Tom in Milton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was very excited to hear that you were reviewing 1967, and I just finished celebrating the anniversary on June 16th, 17th, and 18th of Monterey Pop. And that was an event that revealed and exposed so many different types of music all in one weekend.
Yeah, and you did comment some more on that, Tom.
Well, again, Monterey, I agree 100% with what he said. Monterey Pop was tremendously important. And if you go back and look at photos of Monterey Pop, it is not anything like the rock festival we would think of today, Coachella or Woodstock or anything else. I mean, these are folding chairs set up in rows and people sitting in an audience watching the stage. A police officer later said, yeah, we've had more trouble at PTA meetings than at this thing. So it was very well organized by John Phillips and Lou Adler, Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas, and they broke several new artists, as we talked about, but the association opened the Monterey Pop, and again, people were impressed with what a good live band they were. They were a hip band for a while. Simon and Garfunkel played. It was as the listener says, it was quite the thing, and it's worth going. It lives in the shadow of Woodstock, but it's really worth going back and looking at what was going on at Monterey Pop.
Yeah. Tom, thank you very much for that comment. Tom and Racine, what about you?
Hey, gentlemen, thanks for a really good show. Some of my really strong memories of music at this era would be stuff that was labeled camp, it was so bad that it was kind of interesting. I'm thinking of Tiptoe Through the Tulip was sung by Tiny Tim. Mrs. Miller had a whole album of stuff. And I wonder if there was something about, what was it about the mid to late 60s that made a breeding ground for that kind of stuff?
What do you think, Tom?
I think that's a great, great question, because you got the two that he mentioned. The album came out and it was called Will Success Spoil Mrs. Miller? and Tiny Tim, Tiny Tim got married on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And it was his biggest ratings ever. But then you've got the new vaudeville band, Winchester Cathedral, and which is not on that level, but it's kind of a throwback to almost I hate to call it hokey, but I will. You've got that kind of, I don't know. Is it, are we back to the Beatles as far as kind of searching back for nostalgia in a very turbulent age? I mean, they were reaching back to Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane and all of a sudden you've got, again, Mrs. Miller, and how did these things get played? But they did, and he's right. That's a very good question.
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for that. Appreciate it very much. Maybe take one more here for a minute. John in Menominee, hi.
Hey, how you doing, Larry?
Good, appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Well, you were talking about one-hit wonders and going back maybe a couple of years before you started broadcasting, but I wanted to mention Question Mark and the Mysterians and 96 Tears.
Oh, man. I remember that song. Tom, comment?
Organ sound and absolutely one-hit wonder. The guy from... yeah, there it is. Yeah, Farfisa Organ featured prominently. The bass player for Grand Funk Railroad played with that band for a while. He's not on that record, he says, but the bassist for Grand Funk was coming out of there. But yeah, absolutely. And again, we're back to what we talked about earlier, Larry, with the prominence of organ. That tune is like Black is Black, I Want My Baby Back, and you've got these real prominent organ tunes showing up from time to time.
Yeah. John, thanks. Jimmy in Fitchburg has one that I believe has a comment that relates to a song we've got up at some point here. Jimmy, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I wish I would have tuned in sooner because 1967 was definitely my favorite year for music. I was 14, had my little transistor radio. I remember hearing all of these songs. But the one that kind of really stood out for me, kind of psychedelic, was Incense and Peppermints by Strawberry Alarm Clock.
And
Incense and Peppermints, meaningless bounds. Turn on, tune in, turn your eyes around. Look at yourself, look at yourself.
Oh, Jimmy, thanks for that. A comment on that, the lyrics of that.
I've got nonsense lyrics that would make Lewis Carroll proud. Those are absolutely, dead kings, many things I can't define. That's 1967 in a nutshell, as far as, again, a good 2.5 minute song. You get in, you get out. And they actually played some shows, and a lot of one-hit bands did not. They were kind of put together in the studio. But Strawberry Alarm Clock did play. I know they played a show in Wisconsin at one point. The guy who sang on that record left the band early on, so they had the drummer sing or tried to get somebody to sound like it. But it was a hit. It was a big hit. It went to number one. And even the name of the band is perfect. The Strawberry Alarm Clock. Just absolutely, like surrealistic pillow by the Jefferson Airplane. Just like nonsense stuff, but okay, let's go with it.
Jimmy, thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. Well, let's get Peter, Paul, and Mary involved here. We've got I Dig Rock and Roll Music.
I dig rock and roll music and I love to get the chance to play
and sing it.
I figure it's about the happiest sound going down today.
So the kind of the folk era.
Oh, of course, pleasant vocals, of course, and they just sing those great harmonies, and it's a strong melody. And who would have thought that Peter, Paul, and Mary could have hung in there as far as keeping the hits coming, leaving on a jet plane, and then I Dig Rock and Roll Music. And it's a really strong song, strong melody, but also very clever. And when the Beatles tell you they have a word, love, to sell you, they mean exactly what they say. Yeah, okay, taking a shot at the Beatles here. It's a very fun song and a strong song at the same time.
Jen in Oconomowoc, let's go to you next. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Larry. One of my favorite songs is Respect by Aretha Franklin.
Oh, and we have that on the list. Can we hear a little of that?
What you want, baby, I got. What you need, do you know I got it? All I'm asking is for a little respect when you come
just
home.
A little bit, hey, baby, just a little bit.
Oh, man, yeah, just a little bit.
glad we got ahead. I'm glad we jumped to that one because that is such an important tune. And it also speaks, Larry, to the formatting of radio as far as you would hear Aretha Franklin sing Respect and then you would hear the Rolling Stones do Ruby Tuesday. And all it was far more of a mixture, kind of in a blender as far as a huge variety of tunes. It wasn't so segmented. I'm not trying to, you know, recall for an earlier day, but it was a different type of broadcasting. You'd hear Respect on the same station with the Who. And again, that is such a, you talk about pro women as far as in the lyrics, and Respect is what she wants. Leslie Gore opened the door in 1964 with You Don't Own Me, but Aretha, she comes and kicks that door in. It's a very powerful record once she got onto Atlantic Records.
Yeah, Jen, thank you very much. Let's go to another one from the Easy Beats. The Easy Beats, Friday on My Mind.
I'm gonna have fun in the city. Be with my girl, she's so pretty. She looks fine tonight. She goes out to me.
What do you think of that one?
Oh, that kicks really hard. Again, a one-hit wonder, at least in America, that really, that's a strong, strong tune, memorable song. And they're singing about a weekend and a girl. You know, what else matters? It's great. And, you know, that had a wide audience. When David Bowie put out his album Pinups, where he's covering a lot of tunes, he did a letter-perfect version of Friday on My Mind. So that tune was admired by a lot of different people.
No. And, well, let's take another call. Sarah Ann and Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hey, hi there, Larry.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
This has been such a great show. So much fun. And originally I had thought you had said 1976. I'm walking in and out of the room. And so I'm like, oh, my gosh, that was Oh, What a Night by Frankie Valli and Four Seasons. But the 1967 song that I really liked was by the Monkees called I'm a Believer.
I'm a Believer. And that came out in 67?
Well, that's right around their peak. We were talking about Pleasant Valley Sunday, which was the hit from that year also. But I'm a Believer. Neil Diamond wrote the tune, of course, and the Monkees had a huge hit with it. And again, the Monkees were taken, they were given other people's songs to use, and they just did a great job with them, like Neil Diamond and like Jerry Goffin and Carole Kings with Pleasant Valley Sunday. The Monkees were at their peak right in 67, absolutely.
Yeah, there we go.
And for someone else, but not for me. Love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed.
Oh, yeah.
Davy Jones on the vocal there. And Mike Nesmith, who could be a curmudgeon, but Mike Nesmith of the Monkees said the nicest thing when Davy Jones died. He said, you know, when it came down to it, the Monkees were really Davy Jones' backing band. And I thought, you know, there's something to that.
Sarah Ann, thank you very much. I want to, we've got Pleasant Valley Sunday.
Another Pleasant Valley Sunday. Charcoal burning everywhere.
Get the Monkees back involved here.
Yeah, it's not a lesser known song, but Carole King and Jerry Goffin, I think that's mainly Jerry Goffin complaining about moving to the suburbs. The reason I say I think it's mainly his tune, because I was at a Carole King concert in Ames, Iowa once years and years ago, and I yelled that song, and she pretty much disowned it. She said, yeah, that tune does not exist. Something like, I'm sure she cashes the check, but she did not play the song.
Jim and Stevens Point, let's go to you. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I'm looking at a book that I have that has
three CDs in it. It was created by Shout Factory in 2005. It's called the 60s Rock Experience. And it had most of the songs that you've already played this morning on it. And in fact, the Monkees' Daydream Believer was made in 1967. But it's a fantastic collection of songs from that era. And the song that I really liked from that year was Brown Eyed Girl from Van Morrison.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came. Playing a new game. Laughing and running. Hey, hey.
Oh, man. They got me swinging and swaying here, moving back and forth to that one, Tom.
That tune, it would become such a standard. You almost forget that's a Van Morrison song because so many people would do that one. Jimmy Buffett would do it every night. And, again, it just became kind of a everybody's tune almost, but he's right. Van Morrison had a top 10 hit with that in 67. The ultimate beach song in many ways, I think.
Yeah. Jim, thanks a lot for sending that one along. Well, let's go to the Who. I Can See for Miles. I don't remember that song as well.
Yeah, that one didn't get as much play, and I think it's because it rocks so hard. It was almost out of bounds for, I think, some. I talked about the expansive programming, but that one is a really intense rocker. I mean, it's kind of like early Deep Purple or Pictures of Matchstick Men. It came in and rocked hard. I think that's one of their great tunes. I know other people, my kids say, no, Dad, that's not very good. But I think that was an important tune back in the day. It just, there was nothing on the radio quite like that. They would, of course, become famous for Tommy and Pinball Wizard and all sorts of other tunes. But that was an early one in the, they'd had several hits in England before this, but that was a pretty big one in the U.S. that started to really break them in America.
The Electric Prunes. these band names are so great. I had too much to dream last night.
You asked me how I put the list together. I put a couple of hard rockers there together. It's another one that they did. The Electric Prunes, they had one hit, but they made it count. Psychedelic, absolutely. Larry, I think you could say to somebody the Electric Prunes, and if they'd never heard of them, they would know, oh, yeah, that's got to be a 67 band name. It's just like, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, one band everybody knows, I think, is the Jefferson Airplane. And we have White Rabbit, I think, up next.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. And the ones that mother gives you don't do anything at all. Go ask Alice.
Oh, man.
When she's 10 feet.
Drug culture.
Yeah, I talked about Lewis Carroll earlier, and of course that's where this comes from. And Grace Slick sings it well, and that's their biggest album, Surrealistic Pillow, that also had Somebody to Love on it, and the whole record is quite good. If you listen to that album now, it sounds just almost folky in a way, very acoustic and gentle, and not super psychedelic or hard rocking, but a very important album from 67, and that's one of the two really big hits on it. The record company, of course, wanted more hits like that, but they didn't really happen after that. And Marty Balin, the lead singer who put together the band, never got the credit he should have, and things started to fragment after a while, but they were an important band for sure.
KC in Port Wing has something for us. KC?
Well, good afternoon. One of the bands that is completely forgotten from the 66, 67 was the Yardbirds, which was precursor to Led Zeppelin and heavy metal rock and roll. So anything from the Yardbirds, including For Your Love. Thank you.
Yeah.
For Your Love.
All right. Was that a 67 song?
I'd have to look to be sure about that. That might be a little bit earlier. I think that might be 66. But he's certainly in the right era.
Yeah.
And he's right about the importance of the Yardbirds and how they're kind of overlooked these days. They had Heart Full of Soul, Better Man Than I. They had some definitely strong tunes. And I agree with him as far as the importance of the Yardbirds. And, I mean, the go-to comment on the Yardbirds is Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, and Jeff Beck all came out of that group at different points, but the Yardbirds themselves kind of got second-rate status or kind of got forgotten, and Jimmy Page wanted to use Led Zeppelin. He wanted to call Led Zeppelin the new Yardbirds, and he couldn't do it legally. But Led Zeppelin did just fine without that name.
They did indeed. Well, then we have Jefferson Airplane and White Rabbit. Oh, we did that one. Oh, my goodness, that's right. Tommy James and the Shondells. I think we're alone now.
And so we're running just as fast as we can.
I just heard that song on the radio not long ago.
That's a strong song. Again, Tommy James had some really good pop hits, and that's not a put-down. They were just wonderful. Crimson and Clover, of course,
yeah.
Mirage. But I think we're alone now, top 10 tune. And other people would cover it. Debbie Gibson had a hit with it. But Tommy James, that's a really... You know, Larry, I was trying to find a way to work Bruce Springsteen in here, but it didn't really work. But I would say that if Bruce were here, he would praise I Think We're Alone Now to the skies. I hear some Born to Run in there.
Oh, man.
But yeah, Tommy James and the Shondells, strong band, really solid track record of hits.
Tom Wilmoth, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller for WBR News. Let's take a quick break.
When you kiss me, when you mess me, hold my hand, make me understand. I think I'm in a cold sweat.
In a cold sweat, James Brown.
What a showman. Absolutely. And I talked about the diversity of AM radio at the time, but James Brown is a little too James even for some stations. I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa, listened to a lot of like WLS out of Chicago and Des Moines stations and all. I don't remember hearing a lot of James Brown on the radio, but certainly he broke through. That's a number 7 on the national charts. So he was getting some airplay, but James Brown was in a world of his own. He really wasn't following anybody, and nobody else was sounding like him at that time.
Jan in Viroqua has something for us. Hi, Jan.
I'd love to hear Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man. I heard it played live on a side stage at the World's Fair in 68. So... I wasn't a person who followed popular music, but I was walking by and they were playing it, and it really made an impression on me.
Oh. Oh, the Birds.
Yeah, that's from 1965, but I'm glad she called in because an important song, their first huge hit, Bob Dylan wrote it, of course, that was a 65 hit, and by 1967, the Birds were starting to fade and splinter a little bit as far as the top 40 entries were pretty much drying up by them, and that's how quickly things came and went for bands at that point. But the Birds, I mean, and you know, that completes the final of our Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young thing, because David Crosby comes out of the Birds, so that's our missing piece on that quartet. That's a little early for our time frame, but it's always nice to hear that tune.
Yeah, thanks, Jan. Thanks for that, and it brought back a nice memory for her as we were listening in today and to these songs. Well, let's go to the Buckinghams. They had a number one.
Kind of a drag when your baby don't love you. Kind of a drag when you know she's been untrue.
Oh.
The Buckinghams are easy to forget about. They are the forerunners of Chicago Transit Authority, a horn band with great vocals and strong songs. They came out of Chicago. They're on Columbia Records. They have the same producer, James William Gasario. But the Buckinghams had their own hits. Susan, Kind of a Drag, they had their own hit. That was a number one hit. I've got Heartbreak Set to Horns. yeah, Kind of a Drag. It's so true.
And now we have Procol Harum, a whiter shade of pale. There's the organ, the Hammond organ.
Beautiful Hammond B3 organs solo there. And all sorts, unfortunately, that led to all sorts of lawsuits as far as who wrote the tune and whose organ riff is that. And it kind of got to be the whiter shade of pale kind of turned into the darker shade of things, because that was in litigation for a long time. But what a strong, memorable tune. Now, Procol Harum would be around for quite a few years after this and a couple of other hits, but nothing on that level.
Jeff in Edgerton, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jeff. Jeff, are you there? Oh, I guess we must have lost Jeff. Well, let's turn back to Janice Ian. And Susan.
Called your boy instead of your name, when she wouldn't let you inside, when she turned and said, but honey, he's not our kind.
Oh. Interracial dating.
Yeah, I don't know how that made it as big as it did, if people were like not listening, like for what it's worth, if people were not really listening to the lyrics or what, but I mean, you listen to that, that's a very realistic vignette of interracial dating. That's decades ahead of its time. But Janice Ian wrote it and delivers it well, and it was a strong tune. Still is.
I'm going to skip way ahead because we're out of time
sure.
here, and let's go to the Seekers and Georgie Girl.
Hey there, Georgie Girl, dreaming of the someone you could be. Life is a reality, you can't always run away. Don't be so scared.
I like that song.
Yeah. And notice those, and again, one thing that I wanted to note is 1967, psychedelics and all that, and hard rock, yeah. But notice how many vocal bands we have in here that are doing really well, like Georgie Girl, The Association, Peter, Paul, and Mary. I mean, vocals are tremendously important in 1967, too.
And then the song that I really liked a lot from Lulu, and maybe it was because of the movie, too, I don't know, but To Sir With Love. Let's see if we got that one.
If you wanted the sky, I would ride across the sky in letters that would soar a thousand feet high to sir with love.
Oh, man. That was number one.
And you're not alone, Larry, because that was not only a number one record, that was the number one record for the entire year of 1967. So a lot of people agree with you about the strength of that tune.
Yeah, and she was, she didn't have a lot of hits here.
She's much bigger in England. She was much bigger in England. But yeah, that you talk about Lulu in the States and It's To Sir With Love. But she was better known abroad, but didn't quite continue the career over here.
Well, I understand you have a question for me, by the way, and I want to be sure to get to that.
Okay. First of all, I don't know what we're looking at for time, but I wanted to thank you so much for having me on today and every time you've had me on. It's just I have really enjoyed it and appreciated it. Here's the question. The 1960s was such a fertile time for music. Was there a specific band or performer from that era that you wish you had seen but didn't get a chance to see?
You know, the one that comes immediately to mind is the Beatles.
Okay.
You know, they played in Milwaukee once, I think.
Right, that's correct.
And then they were in Chicago a couple of times. And for one reason or another, I thought, well, maybe they'll come to Madison. What a fool I was to think that.
Well, I don't understand how Milwaukee got the Beatles on their 64 tour. I mean, God bless Milwaukee. But it was like, was it on the way to Chicago or was it an extra night? Because at that time, especially Milwaukee, you look at the dates on the 64 tour. Milwaukee is one of the lower population stops on the entire tour. So I'm still, and they did not come back in 65 or 66, but they were here on that initial 64 run, and I still find it surprising.
Well, that's one group I would love to have. I've seen a lot of groups, but that's one that I really would love to have seen them in person. And now, especially in retrospect, it's been too bad. Well, Tom, it has been a pleasure for me to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'm telling you, it's been so much fun. And I hope you can keep going, if you wouldn't mind, with Lee Rayburn and maybe do summer hits again or one of the maybe at holiday, see Christmas time. It would be great. And I will definitely be listening. when I hear you talk. Thank you so much. I know this is you've done so much work for these programs, and it's meant a lot to me, so thank you.
Thank you, and whatever you need, I'm here. I appreciate it.
Tom Wilmoth, the author of the book Soundbites, A Lifetime of Listening, and you can hear him on his podcast. It's called The Vinyl Approach. Have we got Georgie Girl? We got Herman's Hermits? Let's listen to some Herman's Hermits on the way out. I'm Larry Mueller. Great group. Jeff Robbins did a masterful job today, but of course all the rest of our crew, Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.
And I'm feeling good, just holding you tight. So live.